Ever lose it with your kids and yell those words you swore you never would? You know what it feels like when your button gets pushed and nothing can rescue you. In a nanosecond, a certain look, a defiant behavior, you go from 0 to 60 and react in parenting road rage. Your rational brain goes offline and the emotional memories from your own childhood get triggered, unbeknownst to you. When Your Kids Push Your Buttons and What You Can Do About It is the book that will help you understand where your buttons come from, why your kids push them, and how you can diffuse them so you can choose to parent the way you intend and heal old wounds at the same time. Please check the liner notes to find links to Amazon for the paperback and Audible for the audiobook. She doesn't listen. She never listens is probably the most often assumption I hear from parents about their kids. They just won't listen. And the reason she's running off, the reason she's avoiding, the reason she's resistant is because she's listening very, very well. She knows exactly what you have said. In every one of these situations, I want to say, of course they're listening. They hear you loud and clear. What they don't like is what you're saying. Now, does that mean you should let them do whatever they want to do? No. But it does mean that you need to adjust your expectations to understand that, of course, Celine wants to do nothing other than what she wants to do.
Tell Me About Your Kids is a chance for you to listen in on unscripted conversations with connected parenting specialist Bonnie Harris. As she talks with real parents like you about real struggles like yours, these counseling sessions get to the heart of why our buttons get pushed as parents and offer tips and advice useful no matter your child's age. Listen in and subscribe to Let Go of Old Habits and Raise Your Kids in a Way That Feels Good. If you're having a parenting challenge and need help, visit BonnieHarris.com for free resources, schedule a session, or get a free one-on-one counseling session by becoming a podcast guest. We're all in it together. You're not alone. Thanks for listening.
Tell me about your kids. Welcome back to Tell Me About Your Kids. I'm Bonnie Harris. I am your host, and Adam Arnone is sitting across from me, and I'm not saying is your hostess.
You can.
I always want it. Just, I'm your host.
Yeah.
Adam's your hostess.
I think that there's I don't know. I was going to say, I don't think there's a problem with calling
there's
me.
There's some gender fluidity issues here. You
I
know?
Guess.
Yeah.
It just doesn't bother me. I guess I can be.
Why not?
A co-hostess.
A co-hostess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, someday, once we'll figure out exactly what my official title is.
Someday.
As this ends.
Yes.
Exactly. As we come to a close on the podcast.
As we come to a close, it'll be like. Ah,
yeah.
That's it.
Maybe that's what it'll be.
Right.
This whole thing was just all about me finding a proper title. That's what this whole podcast has been about for the last 3 years. And, you know, 150 episodes was just about figuring that out for me. It was a long road.
It was.
A long road, full of twists and turns and other people's problems.
That's right. Fixed a lot of my problems, I'll tell you that.
I mean, that's true.
You fixed a lot of recording problems.
That's very
you
true.
You got rid of birds. You got rid of lawnmowers. You got rid of dog snoring. You got rid of kids jumping.
That's
true. You got
true.
Rid of thunderstorms. You got rid of, my God, so much.
It is a long list.
Whoa.
It is a long list. I should have been keeping, I should be able to do a podcast based on all the audio things I dealt with. As a piggyback to your podcast.
I think that's kind of a great idea.
It's called Let Me Tell You About Your Kids. Of all the things that could have caused all these audio disturbances, it was rarely ever children.
It's true. Right.
That's wild to me.
Yeah.
People have, you know, that the real story that I think is fascinating is, I mean, there's so many, but one of the things about this is, where are the kids while these podcasts are being recorded?
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they tell us before we start recording.
Right.
But it will be like, I'm in a closet and my children are in the basement. Or like, a neighbor is watching them for, mm-hmm. I have 43 minutes. They're at school. It's always funny when, you know, you get really deep
or
into it.
Or I've plugged them into a television program.
Yes.
Can we get it done before the TV program is over?
Like with? Netflix should have sponsored this show or kicked some money towards us for the amount of children who have been watching their
Netflix
shows.
While we've been recording this podcast. Right.
It's just always a story of you know... Before you tell us about your kids, where are your kids in this moment?
Do you know where they are?
Yeah, they've had to get creative.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Speaking of, today we talked with Lee and Andre. Mm. I don't know where their kids were. We didn't get into that.
No, we did not get into that.
But she brings up having a nanny, so maybe they're with the nanny.
Yeah, maybe. That is funny. They said before we started recording, they said, We are sequestered,
yes.
that I don't think that made it into the recording, but that they were, like, we are locked away in a bunker somewhere. The door is triple bolted. They will not be getting into this room. We need to be able to do this. You know, they come with a problem that just also feels universal.
Couldn't be more common.
It's
right. They have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Which are barely human.
Right.
I mean, really.
You mean in terms of life development?
Yes. Yes. Like they're really at
freshly
2 and 3.
Freshly born, yeah.
Freshly born. They have barely started their journey into being a person. Mm-hmm. But those moments in these days of when you have a young child feels so huge, and it feels like every little thing, every decision that you do, every time that you intervene when something happens, is that this decision is going to stick with me for the rest of my life.
Yes.
This will impact who they become.
And what we know about children and their brain development, these early years, these first 4 or 5 years are critical.
Mm,
so that
absolutely
compounds
right
the daily struggles, you know. And when you've got two kids so close in age who, as they say, most of the time love each other and have a great time together, but boy, when those fights happen, you just want to nip it in the bud.
It's such an awful feeling to have your kids fighting with each other.
Yeah.
It's just an awful feeling.
Yeah.
And you don't want it to, you don't want to feel like that again. You
no.
don't. And you have these two children that you love so much, and you're like, I don't want you to hurt each other.
Right.
I don't want you to hit each other. But as you bring up, I mean, there's so little that you can really do about a lot of that. And it's more about your reaction than it is about stopping it from ever happening again.
Right.
It's more about in that moment, because those things are going to happen. It's part of that human development that those, especially with siblings, that these kids are just going to get into these struggles, but it's how you react to it that will, you know, help move it in a better direction. Let's jump into it. And I hope everyone is doing well out there. Thank you again for listening to all these episodes these past years. It's been awesome to be here with you. And Bonnie, I will see you back here next week.
That's right.
We're going to do a wrap-up. That's just you and I.
That's right.
And we'll be talking about everything that's happened over the last 3 years. And that'll be a sad but fun thing to do. Here we go.
When natural consequences are allowed to teach, children are far more likely to learn. But as soon as blame comes out of the parent's mouth, that opportunity is lost. without blame, appreciation, and consideration for each other will grow with maturity because children don't have to focus on how to protect themselves from getting in trouble. When blame can be replaced with compassion and understanding for what fuels your child's impulsive behavior, your child feels seen and cooperation is way more likely. Welcome, Lee and Andre. How are you this morning?
We're great, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Good, good. So tell me about your kids.
We have two daughters. Celine is 3.5 and Dylan is 2 years old. And they are best friends and they also can start up fights over not very much. When Celine is playing with something or Dylan is playing with something, and the other one wants it. And especially when Celine, who's our older one, takes something away from Dylan, Andre and I aren't sure exactly the right way to react or how to talk to them about it. Because oftentimes our initial gut reaction of how to talk to them about it, I'm not sure that that's really the right way to approach it.
And if I could add one other thing, there are these occasional outbursts, particularly from Celine, the older one. And I remember a few days ago, she just went over and just conked Dylan over the top of the head. And I was mortified that, she had taken, kind of a toy and banged her, over the top of the head. And she was hysterical. Dylan was hysterical about it. So, trying to figure out how to, minimize those kinds of incidents. And it was in and around sharing something. Celine wanted something from Dylan.
So let's first talk about expectations when it comes to a 3.5-year-old and a 2-year-old. 3-year-olds are just getting to the point of being able to share. Before that, so Dylan is, if it's her idea, she might give a toy to a friend or even to Celine once in a while. You've probably seen that. But if there is anything that she thinks she's not going to get her way, also they are both fully egocentric. So their consideration about the world is 100% on them. That's natural, normal. It's the way children are. So even though Celine might be more able to share toys with a friend at school or a play date or something like that, with her sister, forget it. If her sister's got something she wants, and you've probably seen it that her sister might have something that Celine doesn't care two hoots about, but she'll want it.
For sure.
Because she doesn't want Dylan to have it. It's more about what she's going to get out of it rather than any consideration for Dylan. If they are completely non-stressed about everything. If both of them at the same time are feeling really good about themselves and everything is going just their way, they're going to have a lot of fun together.
For sure. Yeah. But there are those times where Celine and Dylan, they're in a fight and maybe we weren't even there to see how it started.
Which is a good thing.
And we're not sure exactly the right way to talk to them. Our gut instinct is to say, Celine, what did you do to Dylan? What did you do to make Dylan cry? But
exactly.
I don't know if that's the right approach.
Well, what do you think Celine hears from that?
She did something wrong.
That's right. That's exactly right. And how is she going to feel about that?
Not very good. She's,
right.
Yeah, not very good.
She's going to feel unjustly accused, right? It's unfair. You don't love her. You love Dylan more. All you've got to remember what an undeveloped brain she has. It's very, very basic, right? Even though it's growing by leaps and bounds every day, she's got another 22 years to go before she's got a fully functioning brain. So you can imagine what, you know, so what a young child takes in is all about them. They don't judge you. They're not going to say, oh, mommy's just really mad today, or daddy didn't mean that. He's just really tired. They don't think that way, right? It's completely about them. So you want to make sure, especially in these first few years, you want to really make sure that there's as little blame to either of them as you can possibly muster. And that's why I call this whole sibling thing that we're going to get into the no blame solution, because it is so important that they don't feel blamed. As soon, even as adults, you know this, I imagine, in your relationship with each other. As soon as you feel a little laughing going on here for the listeners, as soon as you feel blamed by the other, what do?
Get defensive.
Yeah. You shut down, you get defensive, you blame back.
Yeah.
Nobody likes to be blamed. So as soon as Celine feels blamed when you say, what did you do? You're not going to get an answer that you want.
So I really understand that if it's just a disagreement over a toy. But what about the case when Celine's bonking Dylan over the head?
It's even more important not to blame Celine, because what you want is for Celine to be able to take in what she did. You want her to be accountable for her actions, right? As much as a three-year-old can be. So I just want to emphasize here that not blaming her does not mean you're not holding her accountable. Exactly the opposite. When you blame her, she shuts down, she gets defensive. In her, every child has a different way of doing it. And so she just hears, it's all, you know, her world comes caving in on her. And when you see that she does something like hit her sister over the head with a hard object, you're, of course, as parents, you can't stand it. You want to scream at her. And that's the hard part of this whole thing, is pulling in the reins on your reaction, because you see the hit. What you don't see is why the hit happened.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
You don't know what led up to it. You don't know what was going on with Celine. It could just be, I don't want to have a sister here because I want all this stuff for myself. But it's something that causes the hit. So in order for Celine to be at all accountable as a three-year-old can be, you want her to see what's happened. Because when she picks up this toy and hits her sister, what part of it do you think is intentional?
Probably a very small percentage. She's just reacting in a moment, I imagine.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's just pure impulse. She has no ability. Her prefrontal cortex, her executive functioning powers are pretty
limited.
Low.
Yeah.
Right. So she can't think, if I hit Dylan with this toy, this is what's going to happen. She doesn't know that. She's just impulsive. It just comes. Right. So to blame her for it or to punish her for it is completely ridiculous, because it does, she doesn't even know what she's done that she's being punished for. And all she's going to do is take in what a bad kid she is, that you don't love her.
That tracks for me in terms of not blaming her. I think the question that Andre and I have is, well, then how do we react? If the reaction is not, Celine, don't do that. We don't like it when you hit, or you're being naughty. If it's not that, then what is it? How should we be talking to her?
We always want to get to the solution right away. What should I say? Just tell me what to say, right? But we've got to understand why first. Mm-hmm. So that's why I always, you know, take people back through the what's going on with the child, because you've got to understand that in order to get your mindset in place. And I promise you that mindset is going to snap back the next time you see Celine hit Dylan or push her or shove her, right? Because it's that automatic, oh my God, I can't do this. So this is going to take a lot of practice. But you guys are doing this when your kids are so young. And if you can get this down with practice, you're going to be in such good shape. All right. So Dylan is screaming. She's hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think you should do?
Comfort Dylan.
Exactly. Go to Dylan. Don't say a word to Celine. You want to come out with that blame. You want that. You want to feel like you've done something to teach her that she can't do that.
Yes.
But believe me, you're teaching her the exact opposite of what you want her to learn. So the practice is in just focusing on Dylan and leaving Celine out of it for the moment. Because you want, what do you think would happen if you went to Dylan? Celine knows she's just done something wrong. Believe me, she knows. What do you think Celine would do if you didn't say anything to her and you went to Dylan?
She would probably want attention too.
She would stay there and maybe start talking or something. She wouldn't, or would she run off?
I don't know.
I mean, it could be either. She could run off. She could seize the opportunity to grab the toy or whatever mm-hmm. it was that she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think she would probably, you know, run off to make sure that we didn't try and take it from her.
Sometimes she runs off laughing, which is very interesting.
Good. The laughing is her defense. That's a defense mechanism for the blame.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Well, it's good to know we're not raising a sociopath.
I don't think so. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
So she's laughing to protect herself. She's laughing because she wants you to think everything is fine. Who knows what goes behind the laughing? But the laughing is a defense. So if she runs off and laughs, you've got to keep doing this until she learns you're not going to blame her and she stays there and waits and watches. If Celine runs off, it means she's defending herself against getting in trouble. It will take several times of using the no blame solution for Celine to trust that she's not going to be blamed. When she trusts, she'll remain at the scene and watch and wait. In the watching, she sees the natural consequence of her behavior and is then given the opportunity to make amends. Patience is needed for Lee and Andre to trust that Celine will learn accountability. If she stays there and tries to talk or grab the toy or whatever, let her do that. Your focus is on Dylan, and that's what you want her to see. So you're comforting Dylan, and you wait until Dylan is not screaming anymore, right? You got her calmed at least a little bit. Then you turn to Celine, and you say with a genuine question, Celine, would you like to get the ice pack from the freezer or a cold washcloth or Dylan's lovey and bring it to her, see if it would make her feel better? There's been no blame. So when there's no blame, what does Celine see?
Problem to be solved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She sees what her behavior did, and there's a problem. And you're asking her, and this is why it's all up to you. You're asking her with a genuine question, would you like to get something for Dylan to help her? You're not telling her to. You're not angry. And so she may run off to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'll bring it. And maybe Dylan will be so mad at her, Dylan will say, no, 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 go away, right? And then you can say, thank you so much, Celine, for getting that. It looks like Dylan doesn't want you to give it to her, but how about I try? Thank you so much for getting it. It's really helpful.
You have tried that a few times lately. Tried to engage Celine in the problem solving, and it has worked. She has responded to that.
Yeah, I think I've asked her, what can you do to make Dylan feel better? And she'll find a toy that she knows that Dylan likes and give it to her.
Great. Great. So she's gonna take to this like a duck to water. You're focused now on her generous behavior, her helpful behavior. And look at how, you know, this is just great. You've really helped Dylan feel better. You want to really emphasize that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And yeah. So what she takes in is the whole situation. When we yell, when we blame, when we punish, we completely undermine the opportunity for the child to experience natural consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The natural consequences here are the hurt that Dylan experiences because of the impulse Celine has had. Right? Cause and effect.
Right. Right.
And your expectation is adjusted to understand that Celine can't possibly know that hitting Dylan over the head with that toy is going to, you know, split her head open.
Yeah.
Think of a mantra that starts with, of course. Of course, a 3-year-old wants only what she wants. Of course, she can't know or even think of what her behavior will lead to. Of course, she had no intention of hurting her sister. Of course, she wants to get the toy away from her sister. Of course, I'm horrified. Of course, keeps your expectations in line with your child's development and your natural human reactions. When expectations are in line with the child's capabilities, it's a win for all. Have to rush to the hospital. Still, it's best to keep all blame away from Celine. Then, when everything is over, when everything has calmed down Dylan feels better. Maybe they get right back to playing and then you just let it go. But at some point, you come back to Celine and say, remember earlier when you were really angry at Dylan and hit her with that toy and she fell and she cried and cried and cried and cried? I bet you were feeling so angry or so annoyed about something, and that's why you hit her. You want to get right to the emotion that caused it.
Okay.
Right? Because all behavior is provoked by emotion. And so when you can connect with her anger, her frustration, her whatever the feelings you might think are going on, jealousy, and can talk to that, Celine is going to feel heard. She's going to feel gotten, and she's going to know that, ah, Mom and Dad understand me. And then you can say, you know that this is going to happen a lot of times. Dylan is going to want what she wants. You're going to want what Dylan has. Dylan is going to want what you have. That's just part of being sisters, right? So normalize all that and then say, so what do you think you could do next time when that anger takes over, when you feel so angry? Now you are talking to a child, even though her brain is very undeveloped, you are talking to a child whose brain is fully engaged. She's not in the heat of the moment. She's not in the moment of anger toward Dylan. You're talking to her in her state of reason. And it's well beyond the situation, so you're fully in your reasoning brain. Right? So none of you are flooded with all these emotions. So then you can say, what do you think you might be able to do the next time you feel that way? And you ask her, you don't tell her. And if you can get in the habit of asking her, what do you want to have happen? What's your plan? How do you think you can solve that? All the way through their development, that is so much more powerful than telling them what you think they should do.
That's great. That's really good. Yeah.
But here's the key. In her state of reason, she's probably going to come up with all kinds of ideas that she could do, right? That she might say, I'll come and tell you, or I'll let her play with the toy and I'll wait my turn. She's going to say all these sweet things, right? Then you can say, that's a great idea. But then you've got to make sure you do not expect that to happen. For years to come, right? Because in the moment, she's still going to be impulsive. But the more you do this, the less she feels blamed, the more she feels understood, which means the better her self-esteem, the better her self-confidence. And each, you don't have to do this each time, but a number of times, you're putting her through the exercise of thinking, after emotions are down, of thinking about what she'll do about it. So you're helping her fire those neural pathways. You are making those brain cells work harder. If you say, you can't do that, that is not okay, I don't ever want to see that again, nothing's happening in her brain except learning to laugh or whatever she's going to do to protect herself from your anger.
So at what point does it all start to really sink in and you start to feel like, hey, we should be seeing the results of all of this training and work, just so that we have proper expectations?
4 years, 5 months, yeah. 2 weeks, and 3 days.
All right, good. Perfect.
That's the question, Andre. It's everybody wants to know this. And obviously, there's no answer. And it differs depending on your child's temperament, level of impulsivity. Some children are far more impulsive than others. Some children are still having real heavy-duty emotional meltdowns and impulsivity till they're like 9 or 10. And when I say that, I mean still at a place where they need to be understood and accepted for this, not blamed. Beyond that, there, you know, you might want to have an evaluation or something to see if anything is going on. But it'll really depend on who they are, how they relate to each other. How much of the time would you say they play really well together? And how much of the time do they fight?
I would say they play well together most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. It's more of an anomaly when, you know, things like this creep up.
I would say sooner rather than later, this is going to kick in, as you say. But there's always going to be something that flares up between siblings, right? Siblings have a very unusual relationship with each other. Do you guys have siblings?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. One brother.
One brother. And Lee?
I have two twin brothers.
You know that you have a very different relationship with your siblings than you have with anyone else in your life, right?
For sure.
And did when, especially when you were young. Are they close in age, far apart in age?
Mine's 5 years younger.
4 years younger.
And 4 years younger. That's a lot different than Celine and Dylan.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true.
They're very, very close.
The other question I would have is how do we teach or share this with the other caretakers they have in their lives? So especially our nanny. Because our nanny, her instinct is the same as our instinct, which is to protect Dylan and to tell Celine that she's behaving badly in an effort to correct her, in an mm-hmm. effort to teach her.
Of course. This is what we've been doing for generations and generations and generations.
As Andre and I are learning this new behavior, do you have any tips on the best way to share this with our nanny as well?
Get it under your belt. Whether we keep working on this, whether you've got it and you keep helping each other with it, when you have it embodied, when you know why you're doing this and you actually can do it, then you're going to have an understanding of how to share it with your nanny. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Right now, I mean, maybe you've got it enough now, but when you're saying, well, this is what Bonnie said, you know, and this is what we should be doing, it's such a surface level understanding that it's going to be really easy for her to say, but Celine's got to learn that she can't do that. And for you guys to say, oh, yeah, of course, right. She does, right? Because you don't have it embodied. You don't understand what it is that's provoking Celine. And as the girls get older, it may go back, you know, it may turn around the other way too. And that's fine. They are going to learn how to be in relationship with each other so that they can be in relationship with lots of other people, even though the relationship won't be at all the same.
The other question that I was going to ask is, and it's sort of related but a little bit different to the specific behavior problem of, you know, hitting Dylan, is there are, you know, real challenges at times with just getting Celine to even listen. You know, if it's time for dinner, it's time to get ready for bed, it's time to take a bath, and then she's off and, you know, running around to go do something else and is determined you know, not to, you know, sit at the dinner table or, you know, put her pajamas on or brush her teeth, whatever it is. What do you do about that?
Right, right. So what do you understand about what she's doing? What do you think she's doing?
Well, she's avoiding. She you know, wants to do something different. She wants to play. She wants to, you know, not follow rules, all the above.
She doesn't listen. She never listens is probably the most often assumption I hear from parents about their kids. They just won't listen. And the reason she's running off, the reason she's avoiding, the reason she's resistant is because she's listening very, very well. She knows exactly what you have said. In every one of these situations, I want to say, of course they're listening. They hear you loud and clear. What they don't like is what you're saying. Now, does that mean you should let them do whatever they want to do? No. But it does mean that you need to adjust your expectations to understand that, of course, Celine wants to do nothing other than what she wants to do. She doesn't want to get her pajamas on. She doesn't want to go take a bath. She may love the bath when she's there, but it's the changing. It's the you telling her she has to stop doing what she's doing and do what you want her to do.
That's it. She puts up a huge fuss, but you're right. Once she's in the bathtub, hey, she's having the best time ever and playing with her toys. And
her dad doesn't like that right. either when he's in the middle of doing something and I tell him there's something else he needs to do.
Nobody does. Well, and some people have a much harder time with it than others.
Yeah, she inherits it properly.
It's, you know, it may be for you anyway, it's probably having a hard time making transitions. You get kind of hyper-focused on something, and if somebody else is telling you you've got to stop doing what you're doing and do something else, forget it. That's hard. So think about that with a very, very, very immature brain. The number one thing to understand is that she is not being bad or naughty. She's doing what a three-year-old does, right? So that's the most important thing. As soon as you get into that head of she's not listening, she's being bad, she's just doing this to get me, she's never going to do what I want her to do, then you're going down the emotional path of anger, guilt, resentment, frustration, all anything and everything, which then logically leads you to react in a very ineffectual way. Yelling, blaming, grabbing, whatever we do, right? So if you think instead, oh boy, here she goes, off and running, and you realize this is annoying. Absolutely. Frustrating, of course, but absolutely normal. Right? So that helps you get your expectation in gear. Then, if you can think, if I think she's not listening to me, what can I do differently in order to get her to listen to me? See, what we typically think because of how we've been brought up and our parents have been brought up and our grandparents have been brought up is that we've got to get the child to do what we want them to do. And instead, we've got to think, how do I approach this child who is behaving absolutely naturally, developmentally appropriately, and how do I encourage and motivate her to cooperate? So it's, we've got to think about what we have to do, right? And so that might look like a simple choice. It's time for a bath. Do you want to ride on my back like a monkey or do you want to lumber like an elephant?
Yeah, we tried that. yeah, giving them choices on how to do it. But the goal is the same. You're taking a bath or putting on your pajamas, et cetera.
The goal is the same. Absolutely. It's time for, right? And you don't ask. You ready for your bath now? No, I'm not. And then you yank them up and take them to the bath. That's just unfair and disrespectful. We don't think about how disrespectful we can be to our children. But boy, so much of the time. So you want to think about, what is it that she's going to have fun doing? What is it that, because she's three, she turns, and when she runs off, she's probably initiating a chase game. She wants you to chase her. And you chase her, and then she's going to run further. And then if you can play with that for 5 minutes, just play. Right? I'm coming to get you. The monster is going to get you and put you in the bathtub, you know, and let her just get giggling and silly. And then maybe you grab her and tug with her in a very playful, loving, happy, laughing way. She's going to be in a much better place to then go to the bathtub. And then maybe you talk about what you're going to do in the bathtub. What does she want to play with when she gets into the bathtub? When it's time to eat, what do you want to do when you get to the table? What do you think we've got for dinner tonight? I don't know, whatever. Get her head going in that direction.
I love the recommendation of making it fun, or even taking the 5 minutes to chase her and have that fun moment so that everything doesn't become a fight where it's like her will against our will.
Right. And it becomes a fight when you turn it into a fight.
Yeah.
That's what we've got to realize. And let me just say also, I know you're not always in the mood to play a chase game when you're exhausted. It's the end of the day and all you want is your kids to be in bed and asleep. Right?
Yeah,
it's not easy.
It gets taxing. It really does. It's hard to keep doing it.
Think of it as you're paying into an insurance policy. The more you do it now, I promise you, I really think I can guarantee you this. The more you put your effort into being respectful and responsible as parents, having fun with them, giving them that little bit of extra time, making sure you don't blame. First of all, you're going to be a better and stronger person when you learn never to blame. You're going to have it so much easier later on. And man, can I tell you about all the tough situations I work with parents of older kids. And if they had started when their kids were this age, it's never too late. It just gets harder and harder as the time goes on and more patterns get developed.
What I love about Andre and I working with you is how you've helped us really focus on, it's really about shifting the mindset versus focusing. I think I used to be very focused on like, what am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? Like, what is the behavior that I should be using in my parenting? But the mindset shift really helps the rest of that come a lot easier.
Once that mindset shift happens, you don't have to wonder about what to say. It just comes naturally, you know? It's always good to get new ideas about, you know, strategies and things like that. But you're coming from that consistency of, this is why I want to do this.
Thank you.
Yeah, great.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show and telling me about your kids.
Thank you. So much fun.
Thanks for listening. I'm Bonnie Harris. If you're curious to learn more or would like to talk to me personally, check out my website, BonnieHarris.com, where you can also find my books, When Your Kids Push Your Buttons and Confident Parents, Remarkable Kids. There are also links in the liner notes. And please subscribe to Tell Me About Your Kids on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Tell Me About Your Kids is produced and scored by Echo Finch. Thank you.